Are we currently hiring officers? The answer is no. We have stopped hiring, and that's because of some anticipated budget shortages that we are seeing on our revenue side. So in preparation for revenues that will not support our current model of business, our current service delivery model, we have basically stopped hiring. Now, that's one part of the story that's just kind of loomed up recently because we were made aware of a significant liability that's going to be placed upon the city of Yuma that's kind of put us in a position to stop hiring. But last year, about this same time, we did have a discussion, and we were very, very challenged with retaining our officers, especially some of our experienced officers, those officers that have 5 to 7 to 8 years. And we did see an increase in those officers and several others leaving. In fact, during the 2015 calendar year, we had lost 35 officers to some sort of attrition, whether it's retirement, choosing a different occupation, but the majority were going to other agencies is what we found out. We pinpointed that reason as being basically based on wage and benefits. As we did exit interviews, talking to our officers, that they're going to other agencies simply because they can make more money and get better benefits, oftentimes to the tune of $15,000 to $20,000 in additional benefit compared to the package we offered here at the City of Yuma. Recognizing that, we implemented 2 wage increases, which I'll term as a mid-year increase last year, and that would have been around the February time frame. And also, when we started our new fiscal year in 2016, July 1st, 2016, we implemented a second phase to increase our wages. So what I can kind of report now as a success in that is that in 2016, we only lost 18 officers to attrition, which is almost we cut that number in half. If I remember, I said 35 in 2015, but we actually cut it in half. So that was a real good sign. In fact, is right now, as we speak right now, I am fully staffed right now with 176, my authorized budgeted staffing. I'm fully staffed with 176 officers. Now, that can be a little misleading because I know that 10 of them are currently in field training, where they're here with field training officers being trained for the next anywhere from 16 weeks to 20 weeks. And I also know that 3 of them are currently at a law enforcement academy. They still need to go through field training, but they're getting their basic certification. So you start taking these numbers from 176, that's 13. That, in a nutshell, my solo beat strength, where I have 155 officers that are now capable of working on their own, driving a patrol car by their own, they're out of all phases of training. They're on a solo beat status. Last year, that number was 142, so we've actually increased that number by 13 right now. And, you know, that's a good sign. In fact, is, I think I got that number wrong. I think my solo beat strength went up to 158 because we just released 3 officers to the road from field training. So that number is very promising. Unfortunately, on the bad side of it is we're going to stop hiring in preparation for what we think is going to be a budget shortfall or a revenue shortfall because of some liabilities that have been brought to our information. And as a result, I think we're going to be losing some officers. That number is going to go down very quickly again, or we're going to get concerned.
So as of right now, are you happy with what you have?
I'm very happy with where we've come. You know, obviously as a police chief, it's my belief is that, you know, we're on the edge of staffing anyways, you know, but I got to look at balancing, you know, what's available through taxpayer revenue and funding and all that. But based on what we've had in the past, we are much better off than we were a year ago. Now, do I think that should be our actual authorized staffing number? No, I think that back in 2007 and 8, just to give you a little bit of something to contrast about, is that we had 177 sworn officers in our budget. And today, I just said 176. So we have increased nothing in the last almost 10 years, 9 to 10 years. And we know that Yuma has grown. We know that the service delivery model has changed. We know that we've had additional duties placed on our officers, such as mental health. And as a result, you know, do I think our staffing numbers need to be higher? Absolutely. I think we are on the low side of staffing numbers necessary provide this community with the service that they have grown to expect. That being said, I also have to balance, you know, the fact that we have limited revenues, and when those limited revenues get stressed even more, such as they're what's occurring now, then I have to look at ways again to make, you know, our expenses meet the revenues that are available. That being said, as we prepare, we're going to probably be recommending a decrease in 10 officers of staffing here coming up to the next budget year, which will be July 1st of 2017.
And I also wanted to ask you about the tools and equipment. Are you happy with that? Is there anything you would like to have that you don't have?
There's at least a couple of significant major areas that I'm concerned in with the actual tools and equipment we give our officers. They're everyday tools for their officer safety, those immediate things, their weapons, their vests. You know, those things are being provided. They're less than lethal force options, tasers and stuff like that. Those things are being provided to them, and those are not presenting a problem. They've become a priority in being able to get that equipment out to our officers. What is concerning to me, and these are big ticket items that are still looming, is our vehicle fleet is in very poor shape still. When I say our vehicle fleet, that includes not only our unmarked vehicles, but most importantly, those vehicles that most of the community sees that's marked, that's doing the patrol work down there. We have several vehicles, we have many vehicles that are still outside what we call our service life expectancy. So we're fighting to get those replaced, and it's creating a challenge to us. So if I'd say one area that I'm not pleased with where we're at, it's going to be vehicles. The second area that's going to be coming up, it's going to be a big challenge, and we're going to have to find funding one way or the other to get these things addressed, is our portable radios, the actual radios that we carry, that our officers carry. Almost all of our portable radios are out of service life now, too. And, in fact, they're not even making that particular model anymore. So the parts and the service is going to disappear very quickly, probably within the next year or two. So we need to find some type of solution to getting over 200 radios replaced. And, again, that is a significant dollar amount. So if there's two areas that I am concerned about that I would say that I'm not happy, but the fact is they go out of service life, it's radios and vehicles, which are primarily, you know, challenging us because they are significant ticket items. For instance, I know to get all of the vehicles in the police fleet within the service life model, it would be about $3 million, which is a dollar amount that I don't see happening in the near future. But I have to have a plan, which we do have a plan in place, to begin and continue to replace those aging vehicles in a manner that also is balanced as far as the actual revenues that are available.
Which brings me to my next question about this past election. These measures would have increased funding for local public safety departments, but they didn't. What changes were made or are going to be made in response to the lack of funding?
Well, the changes that we're looking at are, and I think I mentioned it briefly right now, is I've got to come up with a new model of police services and how we're going to deliver them in order to meet the revenues that are coming in. And part of that new model, and a significant portion of the expenses, our expenses as a police department, comes in salary. So the easiest way that I can balance my budget is to reduce staff and personnel. Like I'm saying, they take up a significant portion of our general fund budget. You know, my proposals so far, based on what we see, and these are recommended proposals right now to our elected officials and to my bosses, my city administration, is that we cut 10 officers in order to create some cost savings. By cutting 10 officers, that's an expected savings of close to $800,000, so we're nearing the million mark. But as I cut, and that's really the big reduction that I'm proposing, as I begin to cut officers, I have to look at ways that I can't deliver the same service level to the community. I'm 10 officers short now. And as a result, I have to find other ways to increase our efficiencies or to delay that service model, as I say, or change that service model. And some of the other recommendations that we're looking at that would come as a part of reducing our personnel by 10 people would be to increase call response times to lower priority calls. In other words, my priority would still remain being sure that we have enough officers to respond to the life safety call, but I would take a look at our lower priority calls, and the best way I can do this is give you an example, such as a theft of bike from your front yard or from a citizen's front yard, is that we may not be able to respond to that call within an hour period of time. We may ask that we be given 24 hours to respond to that call. That way I keep our patrol officers who are, need to be available to respond to the 911 calls, the life safety calls, available instead of being tied up on a theft of bike call, which we would hold until we have one of our civilian police support officers available to go respond to. So we wouldn't tie up that sworn officer, which we call the gun toters and the radio toters and all that. We wouldn't tie them up on the lower priority call. That would be a change in the way we do business. That would also be a change for the public to be aware of, is that, you know, most of the time you pick up the phone right now under the current models, and you can expect to see a police officer pretty quickly, generally speaking. Sometimes there's some delays, but generally speaking, within an hour or two, we are going to respond regardless of your problem. That will most likely change if I have to, again, cut 10 officers from our staffing level. That would be one way. Another possibility, another recommended possibility, is we start putting thresholds on the crime that we respond to. For instance, we may end up deciding not to take a report, a full-fledged report, on a theft $1,000 and less, that we would maybe just make a CAD entry into our computer-aided dispatch and not do an official, fully documented report. Again, because it's the thing of resources. I just don't have the resources to respond to every crime now. So we'll probably take a look at the level of crime that we're responding to. Again, the purpose is to keep ourselves available for those 911 life safety calls. So there's a couple areas I could see changes to. Another area is, you know, police departments have grown to be kind of this full service, we do everything. You know, not only do we enforce the laws, not only do we take police reports, not only do we do traffic control, not only do we ensure, you know, do traffic accidents, but we also are very active in building community relations. We're also very active giving classes on crime prevention. We're very active in giving classes on active shooter and how to better run your business or your company in a safe manner to make it as safe as possible. We're heavily involved in Special Olympics. We do a lot of honor guard presentations. We're in the schools teaching all the time. We do all these other activities, which makes us a more respected and trusted organization within the community we serve, because we are out there not just enforcing the laws, but teaching people what it is to be a good citizen and what it is to prevent crimes, such as locking your car doors and stuff like that. We're going to have to take a second look at all these additional activities, collateral activities. We're also asked now, because we're the only 24/7 response to mental health crisis. Now I'm asking our police officers to become involved in being able to diagnose and assess somebody who's in a mental health crisis and be able to adjust our response, because we have to teach them differently. But we just do so much out there. But I have to find ways to cut that back, because still our primary role to any community is that 911 life safety. I mean, at the end of the day, if somebody's getting hurt, if their property's being stolen and they can see it happening, if there's a chance that we have an accident out there and somebody's hurt, we need to respond quickly and we need to have the personnel available. So that's ultimately our goal, is to continue to maintain that level of service, but it's going to come with a cost.
We'd like to understand the protocol of YPD when it comes to dealing with illegal immigration. Does YPD enforce immigration law?
The actual enforcement of immigration law, we don't do. But what we do do is when we come during our normal routine patrol and all that, when we become aware that there may be an immigration law that's been violated, we have some reason to believe that somebody is not in this country legally, we have the benefit of having, you know, several hundred both immigration and border patrol officers that live in this community, work in this community because our close proximity to the border. I call us a little bit different than the inner communities who are not close to the border. So as far as enforcement, we will detain somebody for a very short period of time, because the reality is within that very short period of time, we are turning them over to an immigration officer so that they can enforce it under their federal guidelines. But do we have the authority to detain? Absolutely, we do. Will we do it? Yes. But if there ever came a time where that time period became extended, that we were actually detaining folks for longer than a reasonable period of time, then I would be the first probably to tell you that I have to reconsider what our priorities are here, and those discussions would have to have. But fortunately, I haven't had to have that discussion because, again, the cooperation, the relationship that we have with our federal partners and responding when we do have those situations where we've come across somebody that there's cause to believe they've entered illegally has been phenomenal and has not actually created a conflict in our individual missions. So that's my way out of that question is we are fortunate to have the United States Border Patrol and Immigration and Customs Services at the level that they occupy this area because it doesn't hurt us. It doesn't impact our mission at all.
YPD doesn't specifically go and investigate it. It's just if in a course of another investigation, then you would...
Correct. Great way to put it. Yeah. We will not specifically go out and do some type of immigration law enforcement detail. Number one, I don't have the resources. Number two, the resources that do those investigations are abundantly within this community already to do those types of investigations.
Does YPD have any type of formal agreements with Border Patrol?
Formally? No.
No.
No, we don't have actually a formal agreement. We have policies that direct what we do during immigration type of, if you come across people who are in the community illegally and stuff like that. And it has been the same way for years, even back when I was a patrol officer, brief detention. And as far as actual full-scale investigations into federal law, that's just nothing that we've had to begin to enter into.
President Trump recently directed Homeland Security to deputize local police officers so they can enforce immigration law. Given the state the department is in now, do you believe YPD is ready for that?
No, I think our resources that we have here, I think we could deputize all we want, but I don't see our resources prioritizing that as being something that would be critical to the needs of our community right now. I think that we'd have to have some discussions about that should it happen. And I'm not so sure right now, but I think there's an appellate court judge that's put some type of hold to some of his executive orders. And I don't get involved too much in the political stuff, but if we were to add on an additional duty such as enforcing federal regulation through deputization of immigration laws, I'd be greatly concerned we don't have the capacity to do that, especially in light of some of the challenges that we're going to be having without that being added to our plate relative to some of the budget revenue shortcomings that are coming up.
So how do you think this would affect community policing?
If you're just talking solely about some of the adjustments that I suggested as far as I think there's a huge, huge impact on. And if you ask for any one concern, in my mind right now, the shortfalls that we are expecting and believe that are going to occur, one of my biggest concerns is we're going to lose that relationship we've formed with our community because that'll be some of the areas that I'm going to have to look at cutting back on significantly. And I'll tell you that those relationships, I think, are directly related to our nearly 13% drop in violent crime in this community. But when you compare 15 to 14, those two years, that if it wasn't for our community calling us, it wasn't for our community being our eyes and ears, during that time period we have not increased staffing, that we would not be doing as well in the crime area as we are, that we'd probably be in poor shape in reported crime, and our violent crime numbers would have been up rather than down. I think it's through those efforts, that we force multiply by building those relationships with the community. And when I don't have the taxpayer money, the monies that coming in through other revenue sources to put more police officers on the street, then I depend heavily on the community. We as a police department depend heavily on the community to be our eyes and at least be our eyes and ears out there. Over the last year and a half, we have really, really increased our outreach in social media. But with it comes management too. We've added Twitter, we're in the Facebook world now. You know, our transparency, I believe, has increased dramatically within the last 10 to 5 years. You know, anymore, the day is, if I can get some video of somebody that has committed a crime, I want to put it out as quickly as I can over those sites, because I am telling you, that has been just a godsend, and just sending out that information to the community. And oftentimes it's almost instantaneous that we get somebody identified that we didn't know who it was that committed a crime, and we're closing it up. So it's these things that have kept our head above water as a police department as we've gone through the economic downturn that occurred, you know, 6 to 7 years ago, and as we worked back up and as we've dealt with the challenges. Without the community, we would have been suffering, no doubt in my mind. And it's through this social media outreach that's made us much more efficient. If I was going to ask anything from the community, I'd ask for them to be patient with us as we're going through this. You know, my commitment is that I intend to be transparent. If we are cutting services, they'll know about it before we start cutting these services down a little bit. So I'm, you know, in the process now. We have elected officials that give us vision and direction, and we got to work through some of these things. But as they become more concrete and that vision of us making cutbacks becomes more clear and more absolute, then you know, the community can trust that we'll be transparent with that information and letting them know where these things are going to be happening. Because the last thing I want is to have our community lose trust in the department. And I'm much better off telling them the reality is it's going to maybe take us a little bit longer to get to that theft of bike with no suspect information. But here's the reasons why, you know, because we're struggling with revenue. And obviously, you know, I want to make sure that if the time comes, hopefully it'll never come for our citizens, that they need us in a hurry-up way, that we have the people there that'll get there, and they're not busy on low-priority calls, that they're available to get there and get there in a very speedy manner to protect them when necessary. So looking for the community's patience. All
right. Thank you, sir. Mm-hmm.